This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club on FUBAR Radio.
And we're live. It's midday. We're here to stay at midday. That's our rhyme. You can make your own ones up at home, guys. But I'm sticking with the good stuff. My name is Nick. My name is Nick Helm.
And my name is,
simply put,
is Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to Nick Helms and
Nick Helms Fan Club with
Nick Helms Fan Club with loyal sidekick Nick Helm. Oh, hi Nick, how's it going? Yeah, it's all right.
Oh, also starring and also starring Laura Lex Ahisha with.
I think that that's very bad to announce the guests.
I only did it in the context of a great.
But knowing our show, I'm always surprised when they turn up.
So yeah, we could still be a surprise.
We might not have any guests today. So my name's Nick. This is
Nat,
and you're listening to Nick
and Nat. This is like an answer phone message.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep. I don't know this bit, but where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
Hang on.
It's not a Seinfeld fan?
Yes.
That was from Seinfeld. Anyway, this is the first time you've tuned in, this is the show.
This is what it's always like.
This is what it is. But if you've been
listening and you're thinking, what's going on? And you're a regular listener, same.
If you're confused, don't worry. It's five-star entertainment. My name's Nick Helm.
My name's Nathaniel
Metcalf. Why do you always pause so long before you say your name?
Dramatic pause.
Oh, is that what it is? Because you look terrified.
I think because...
I say, my name's Nick Helm, and it looks like you freeze like a rabbit in the headlights, and you're trying to...
I think it's...
Is your real name Nathaniel Metcalf?
Yeah. Or do you think it's a stage name?
Well, it's a little bit like you're trying to remember the lie that you told every time I introduce it. It's a really weird weather today, because I'm only wearing a T-shirt, but I'm covered in corpse sweat.
No.
When you walk around Edinburgh and it's cold, you're damp.
Yes, I
call it corpse sweat. I don't know if that's an official... Can you look it up? Is that a medical term? I don't know if it is there, Natalie, but can you just look it up? I'm Nick Helm. This is
Nathaniel Metcalf.
And that's Natalie Fubar. That's how I've...
Natalie Fubar's back.
That's how I've saved her in my phone.
We on holiday last week, Natalie.
You were on holiday last week? Where did you go? Can you be a bit quicker with your answers? Because the listeners... Palmer's Green. What is that on the Central Line?
I thought it was on the Central Line.
Oh, I hope you had a lovely time. Yeah. I hope you had a lovely time in...
It's a day out,
Never Eat Shredded Wheat. East London. it is a day
West,
out.
West, isn't it?
West London. You went on holiday to Palmer's Green?
North
London. Why do you keep just saying West London, North London? You're just saying different
directions.
Different directions of London. Did you really go on holiday in London? But you moved house. You didn't go on holiday. So why did you keep up the pretense of saying that you went on holiday all this time? We've been talking about this now for over a minute and a half, and not once did you say, guys, it wasn't a holiday. I was moving house. They can't hear you at home. So just be quicker with all of this, because that's just dead air. This is a complete waste of everyone's time at the moment. Oh, my God. One star. What, Albert Ross, 159, you fucking cunts. Jesus Christ. I'm doing this. What, you fucking... What,
that
you
should have
absolute,
a, that probably should have some sort of apostrophe.
Natalie, I do not need this right now. Fucking hell. Just to give everyone an update, I was on some horrible antidepressants. I was on them for 2 months. I hit absolutely rock bottom. I decided to come off them last week, and I've come come off them, and I'm only now beginning to feel good. I've started going to the gym again, right? I'm only now being able to leave the house, right? This is serious stuff. I come in here, it's the only 2 hours of my week that I actually enjoy, and I come in here, and Albert Ross, 159, and you're laughing about it, the glee in your face that you are actually displaying in front of me, that Albert Ross, 159, has given us, me and Nat, 5-star entertainment fan club, 1 star!
Is it a mistake? Do you reckon he's done a mistake?
I think he's probably pressed the wrong button. Read it. Albert's being nice, just trying to be funny. Well, do you know what, Albert? Leave the jokes to me and...
Nat.
And leave the comedy to us, guys.
Nat.
It's not even meant to be a funny show. People keep saying this show's hilarious, and it's just like, it's not.
We're trying
it's not
best.
Meant to be hilarious. It's meant to be hard-hitting journalism. So it's actually... So the 5 stars even wind me up. More than the 4 stars. The 4 stars, don't, mind you, I'd rather have a 1 star than a 4 star, I have to say. Because at least you can put that on the poster.
Yeah?
And at least people will scroll through iTunes and they'll look at it and they'll go, bloody hell, that must be bad. Let's give that a listen. Very much like Edinburgh shows. But I'd rather have the 5s. Anyway, so I guess we'll read it out. So
starts off first line.
No, wrong button. It's the wrong button. There we go. Hang on. Oh, God, that caught in my mouth. I've swallowed it now. It's fine. So
it's back where it was. Put it back where it should be.
I got in a taxi last night, and I've been so Wednesday was leg day, and literally I've not been able to walk. I tweeted about it, but I said because I was down. I've got like I rent a flat, and I've got it's like anyone that's on my show knows quite detail. My show like my tour in 2017. There was a detailed description of where I live, the flat. It's 2 floors.
Oh, really? So people have been able to figure out where you live?
I think no, not where I live, but a detailed description of the layout.
Oh, okay.
Of the blueprint.
Gotcha.
I went into quite intimate detail. And basically, I was sat downstairs after the gym. My legs were burning like they've never burnt before. And the doorbell went. Upstairs, and I had to crawl across the living room and up the stairs to the door, arm over arm.
Like Action Man.
To get to the door in time, and I was just like, it was like the scene in RoboCop where Miguel Ferrer gets shot in the legs, and then they leave a hand grenade, and he's trying to get rid of the. I don't know why. Why is he trying to crawl towards the hand grenade?
Because I think he thinks he can throw it away, but it's not gonna.
But you just think, get behind the fucking sofa, innit?
Yeah.
Crawl behind the sofa and just use anything for protection, but don't crawl towards the hand grenade.
I think it's because it wouldn't be as good dramatically as a film.
Yeah, maybe. And Paul Verhoeven is all about making things extra dramatic.
Yeah.
So I do respect it in a lot of ways. But also, the other thing was that when I tweeted it, I put... when I wrote Miguel Ferrer, Twitter autocorrected his name to Ferrier.
Ferrier-Rocher.
And when I tweeted it, it autocorrected it. And I got a few likes, but it makes it look like I didn't know how to spell his name.
That would infuriate me.
It because you can't edit a tweet.
No.
So it just, and it already got, I was so fucking angry about it. It did bring me down.
It would. That'd finish me, because people would go, he doesn't even know what.
Doesn't even know Miguel Ferrer's name.
I think that about someone else.
Doesn't even know Miguel Ferrer's name. Star of RoboCop and
Twin Peaks,
Hot Shots Part Deux, and Traffic.
He's in Traffic. He might be in Traffic. He's George Clooney's cousin, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah.
Well, he was. He's dead now.
Yeah, sure. I was thinking George Clooney's dead.
No,
but no.
Miguel Ferrer. But I do. I do love him in RoboCop. RoboCop is because he's one of the good guys, and he's still
he's still
sleazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the bit when he gets killed. Spoiler alert.
We've already said he crawled towards a grenade.
He's snorting cocaine off of prostitutes' breasts, and then the bad guys come in and get him. And, oh, sorry. It's actually, I think, doing the show with this music in the background.
Constantly.
I love it.
There's a sound bed.
I love it. Maybe we should get some, can you download some more relaxing, chilled out sounds? Free with the Daily Mail on Sunday. Chilled out sounds.
Michael Caine did a chill out album.
No.
He did one that was called...
That was really Scooby. Oh. Zoinks, like, let's get out of here, Scoobs.
Could you look that up for us with a track listing? It was like about 10 years ago, Michael Caine released an album that was like, yeah, it's just about favourite chill-out songs. But they're all like really sort of modern...
Did he sing them?
Yeah, Caned, that's it.
Fucking Caine. Hell.
Although, interestingly, the picture we've been given has a 4.5-star review. Not by, none of the songs are by.
Seven reviews, 4.5 stars. And he sings them.
No, he just, it's like a compilation of his favourite, like, chill out anthems. It's like a Ministry of Sound compilation, but promoted by Michael Caine.
That never happened.
I mean, you've just seen, this is the track listing.
Can you download the entire album, please? And also, could you get me a napkin? Because I am dripping with sweat here and I don't know what's going wrong with me. So that's what I like about RoboCop is that even the supposedly likable characters are disgusting. I just think, oh yeah, what a movie!
But he's a very likable villain, isn't he?
That's a perfect movie.
Or like, he's, yeah, because he's not the villain. Yeah,
he's not. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's a slightly scuzzy, but he's not like an anti-hero. He's sort of a hero. He's sort of like, well, he's not a hero, but he's RoboCop's pal. Do you know when they switch him on at the beginning and he gives him like a thumbs up?
Oh, yeah.
And you're kind of like, yeah, I think, oh, it's what a film. That is film. An incredible film. Yeah. It's his best film.
Not great.
RoboCop's
CGI
best
in it,
film,
though,
isn't it?
CGI.
Not great CGI.
Good.
No, the CGI. Yeah. Oh, it's proper 80s CGI. Isn't
it is.
We went to see RoboCop at the Prince Charles Theatre. We've probably said this before.
Oh, yeah.
We went to RoboCop at the Prince Charles Theatre, and there were a bunch of millennials sat behind us, and they were laughing at RoboCop rather than with RoboCop, which
even
is
when
basically...
Even when it had jokes in it, they'd laugh as if it wasn't meant to be funny.
As if it wasn't meant to be funny. It's like, RoboCop is like a perfect combination of gross-out horror, science fiction, comedy, action, thriller. It's got everything, special effects. But there are jokes in there.
I've just remembered that clip, that video clip you sent me of RoboCop just shooting dicks.
Shooting dicks is that thing. Oh, thank you. Some paper towel. Oh,
well,
there we go.
Topic.
Just mopping myself down. I don't know why I'm sweating so much. Somebody called me a pig on Instagram, so I blocked them.
Well, good for you.
I feel great.
I thought Instagram was meant to be the nice one.
It is. Eileen Griffiths doesn't know what she's talking about. she was on the wrong oh, social media outlet. Right, let's get these reviews done and out of the way.
A one-star review.
There's this cunt that's come along called Albert Ross 159.
The first line of it suggests something else.
He's having a bit of a bad day. Yeah. Yup, I'm doing this. That's the title.
Mm-hmm. That should have a comma in it.
Oh, where to start, Albert Ross 159? Why is Albert space Ross 159? Shouldn't it be Albert space Ross space 159? I mean, he doesn't even know how to put his name in. I love this show. Wow. Really love it. Oh, hang on, I'll do my radio voice. I love this show. Really love it. I've been a huge fan of Nathaniel's since
nice.
I heard him on the Lost Treasures of the Black Heart podcast performing some absolutely hilarious stand-up.
It doesn't sound like a one-star review so far.
So it was a joy to discover he had his own podcast. Uncle's all right, I suppose.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Done more than fucking uncle, mate. You fucking cunt. Fucking absolute prickhole.
Oh, no. I think someone's trying to create...
I think someone's
trying to create a division.
Absolutely fucking... And also,
I heard
the Nathaniel's Lost Treasures of the Black Heart podcast, and it wasn't hilarious. Right? It was good. It was good. I mean, with friends, I thought it was very good, but I mean, hilarious is a bit much. I smiled a few times. I was doing the washing up and I smiled a few times. I thought, oh, good old Nathaniel, you know, he's
He's managed to get himself on a podcast.
He's getting out of the house and doing a podcast. That's great. But, I mean, hilarious is big words. Uncle's all right, I suppose. You're wrong there, mate. Just look at the Amazon reviews. Most people think that that's, you know, the best thing I'll ever do. I'll tell you this for now. This FUBAR show is... Oh, God. I need to make another appointment with my doctor. I need to get some new pills. Keep it light. Anyway, this podcast is so much fun that Lee
Lee wanted
is that I wanted to be part of it and to give you guys some more filler. To ramble. Filler.
We don't need this.
We don't need these. We
this
don't
is a
need
distraction.
Reviews. We're literally doing this, you know, to
it's try and include everyone.
It's a sideways glance at other inferior podcasts, the sorts of podcasts that beg for
reviews.
Approval.
And we're not
reviews.
Even a podcast.
We're not even a podcast. We're a fucking live radio show. Anything could happen. Anyway, we've got Liam Neeson coming in later. there we go. Silly old Liam. So so anyway,
it'd be nice if that was one of the if that was like a headline on one of the papers.
That's just
that said like silly old Liam.
I mean, I think that is the sanest way of dealing with it, isn't it? don't give it any more thought. You just go, oh, silly old Liam. I don't think I've anyway. I don't think I've seen any of his films in the cinema. But one of my favourite films is Sam Raimi's Darkman.
It is, yes.
And I do like Liam Neeson in that film, but I always wish that it was Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, doesn't the end of Darkman end exactly the same as for the villain? Because that's the thing where there's...
Mission Impossible 2.
How is it? With the clicking... I was going to say, like, it's like the Miguel Ferrer thing. It's with the... It's like a grenade, but they've got the little bowing thing, haven't they? That's going to blow up.
That's not with, but that doesn't happen with Miguel Ferrer.
No, in Darkman.
Yeah, with the little duck.
Yeah, yeah.
The little bird thing that does it. When they've got one of them on and the ship in Alien as well, don't they?
Yes, yes.
One of those little ducks that nod. Yeah, that's in Darkman.
And it's to light a lighter, isn't it? That's going to blow up the.
Yeah, sure. I can't remember exactly, but
I sort of remember the last bit of being the villain trying to get towards that to knock it off the table. Before
but I don't know if it's the main villain. That's how they blow up Darkman in the first place. Dr. Liam Neeson. Darkman is such a good film.
It's a great film. It's also like a superhero movie before they were popular.
Well, basically, like, Sam Raimi tried. He did a George Lucas where he tried to get the rights to The Shadow.
Oh, is that right?
And he couldn't get the rights, or he did get the rights to The Shadow. Or he didn't get the. It was taking so long that he just decided. So what George Lucas did was he wanted to get the rights to Flash Gordon, and it took him ages. So or he couldn't get the rights or whatever, and then so he wrote Star Wars instead. And Sam Raimi wanted the rights to The Shadow, and then that took ages. But at one point, I read ages ago that Sam Raimi was meant to be doing the 80s Batman with Bruce Campbell as Bruce Wayne.
Oh, wow. Was Joe Dante at one point as well, Batman?
I mean, alternate universes, isn't it? I don't know why any of them didn't take over after Tim Burton.
Mm.
I mean, anyone would have been better. I hate Batman Forever. Like, everyone goes on, like, Batman and Robin is one of the worst films ever made. But
Batman and Robin was the biggest... Batman Forever, sorry, was the biggest, like, leap from the previous one of being like, oh.
Like, right. Like when people were, like, going, are we going to reboot it with Batman Begins? I was just like, I don't really consider the first four related to each other in any way yeah. other than some of the cast. Like, even Batman and Batman Returns is kind of like, well, they've completely changed all of the set. Yeah. They've recast some of the characters. Oh, but you know what... oh, God. So this is really cool about Batman Returns. I will finish the review in a bit. But the thing about Batman Returns was really cool was that Billy Dee Williams was originally meant to come back as Harvey Dent.
Yes.
And he was meant to be the Christopher Walken character. And at the end, Selina Kyle was going to electrocute Harvey Dent. And then in Batman Forever, he was going to...
Be the main villain.
He was going to be the main villain. He was going to be Two-Face because half of his face was going to melt. And for some reason, Tim Burton decided to invent, you know, there's so many characters in Batman's arsenal. And in Batman's, what do you call it?
You see Batman's arsenal in Batman Forever, don't you?
You absolutely
you get the
close up. And you see Batman's dicknell in the
in the comics.
In the comics. What's the what do you call it, his rogues gallery. Mm-hmm. And Tim Burton just invented Max Schreck. And you go, Max Schreck is obviously named after the actor who played Nosferatu in the original 1920s Nosferatu movie.
That's right.
It was later remade by...
Well, also...
Who was it remade by? Werner Herzog. Called Nosferatu, starring...
I've got his book at home.
This is pathetic.
It is pathetic. It's pathetic, Nick. Oh, God.
This is pathetic.
Oh, God.
I've forgotten as well. what was his name? Klaus Kinski.
Klaus Kinski. I've got a good fact, though. Everyone thought that Max Schreck's name was a pseudonym because Schreck...
was his favourite cartoon.
Yeah, no, isn't Schreck, I think, is death or means death or horror in German.
Really?
And so everyone thought, oh, come on, mate, with your sort of cartoon name. And it was like, no, that's his actual name.
Look at that.
There you go.
Hey, it's really interesting. Mm. Well, yeah. It's interesting.
Christopher Walken is brilliant in that.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Well, that was, I think, most people's reintroduction. Like, Christopher Walken had done King of New York, but I didn't really know who Christopher Walken was. So he'd done Deer Hunter, funnily enough, and he'd done King of New York, and he was in Annie Hall, and he'd done films. But like, no one really knew. I didn't know who Christopher Walken was.
No, it's true. That was probably, his sort of felt like a big comeback. Like, it was certainly an introduction to me as a kid.
It's sort of a comeback, but he was never in the same league as De Niro or Pacino, was he? You know? And why are you drinking so much? Why are you laughing?
It makes it sound like I've got a drink problem.
Right.
Why are you drinking so much?
Why are you drinking so much, mate? Anyway,
it's a bit late.
What I really want to talk about, I'm worried about you. Just on live radio, mate. I'm sorry.
That's
my friend, director Jamie Adams.
Not a fan of the show.
Not a fan of the
show. Or maybe Liz doesn't listen live.
Or maybe he's just like saying, trying to correct us.
Yeah.
I think you're fine. Batman Returns. It was 1992. Although he didn't say any.
It's called Klaus Kinski.
Klaus Kinski?
Klaus Kinski.
Klaus Kinski. What's your favourite Klaus Kinski film?
I think he's great in a film called... what a terrible
A Few
day
Dollars
it
More. It's A Few Dollars More, that's the answer. It's A Few Dollars More. He plays the hunchback in A Few Dollars More.
He does.
That's the correct answer, if anyone ever... Just for the listeners at home, if you don't know anything about Klaus Kinski, but want to look really cool in front of your mates in the pub or the cafe, say A Few Dollars More. That's your favourite. So, hang on. Christopher Walken was really good in Batman Returns, and then it was a little bit later after that, he did the double whammy of True Romance, Pulp Fiction. Just a double whammy, that's the two of them. the early 90s was really when his career sort of like took off, I think.
And it felt like he was a big deal. Well, actually, again, for the first time. Because I guess it was like he was more seen as like a very sort of serious actor. In the sort of early 90s, it almost became that he became a star, right? So Christopher Walken became like a... If you cast Christopher Walken, you wanted Christopher Walken to be Christopher Walken in your film.
Sure, but I knew who Robert De Niro and Al Pacino were when I was growing up. And I'd never heard of Christopher Walken until the 90s. And maybe it's because Batman Returns was sort of a kid's film. Yeah. It's not a kid's film. It's fucking hell. But do you know what I mean? I went to see it at the cinema. So I don't know. But maybe that's why. But then it's not like Robert De Niro was making Bambi.
Sure, yeah. But I guess...
If anything, he kills, but he's the one that killed Bambi's mother. Because he's the deer hunter.
Yes!
He was in The Deer Hunter. But Christopher Walken has the big scene in The Deer Hunter.
It does.
But I don't think it made him a huge star. Maybe he got Oscar nominated for it. Maybe he didn't.
Yeah, he's in films.
It's all speculation.
If only
there was a way to look it up. Natalie!
He's like, he's in a bunch of films in the 80s where you sort of retroactively go, oh, there he is. He's always about.
Was he in Heaven's Gate?
Yeah, I think he was in Heaven's Gate.
I've never seen Heaven's Gate. Have you seen Heaven's Gate?
Yeah, I watched it once.
I wonder what it's like.
It was really, you know, it was really good.
What, Heaven's Gate?
Yeah, it wasn't like, it's not something you watch and you go, well, this is a disaster.
It's the film that sunk the studio, though, wasn't it?
And that supposedly changed Hollywood. That meant since then, everything's been blockbusters, hasn't it?
I was thinking about the Heaven's Gate because, you know, so there was the Watergate scandal. Mm-hmm. And then there was Heaven's Gate. Mm-hmm. And then there was Waterworld, which was called Kevin's Gate. Yeah, because it was such a big story at the time. But then it's like...
I don't know, go on.
But then it's like... Well, did you just add gate to things?
Yeah, there was Diana Gate, wasn't there? But, Princess Diana.
But then surely when you go back retroactively, it's Watergate Gate.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that's fan club.
I guess the stream only flows downstream.
Do you remember?
Stream only flows downstream. Stream only flows downstream. Look at the top of my screen. Look at the top of the screen. The Deer Hunter won 5 Oscars at the 51st Academy Awards in 1979. Best Picture by Barry Spikings, Michael Dealy, and Michael Cimino. Is it?
Cimino, I think it is.
Cimino.
I think
as in
Cimino.
Chim Chim Chury.
Yeah.
And John Peverell. If you need to pepper-proof your house, then simply use Peverell. John Wayne's final public appearance was to present the award. He was very ill with cancer at the time, so John Wayne wore a scuba suit underneath his tuxedo.
Is that right?
Yeah, to make him look a bit bulkier.
Oh.
Yeah, not a scuba suit, not like one of them Victorian... He didn't just... What was it, though? It's like a wetsuit.
A wetsuit, oh.
Mm. Underneath his tuxedo.
Poor John Wayne.
Ah, poor John Wayne. Silly old John. So so you've got a choice here. Indulge this one ridiculously entitled fan club fan. Oh, hang on. What's going on here? Anyway, this podcast is so much fun that I wanted to be part of it. We've done all this. Anyway, this podcast is so much fun that I wanted to be part of it and to give you guys some more filler to ramble through when you run out of Nisa stories.
We'll never run out of Nisa stories.
Well, we didn't go today.
But
bloody hell, we
that's
did
out
get,
of fear.
We went to the fucking post office today.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mind? Like, Nathaniel was just being quite pleasant. I had to pick up some post from the bloody post office. haven't opened it yet, but it's probably another bill. I don't know. So we're queuing in the line. It's very, you know, and Nathaniel moved out of the way to let a woman in, and could have been a man. It was a woman. And he was just had his head through the door just talking to me as I was picking up my parcel. And she just piped up, didn't she? She just had to pipe up. And she said, "Would you mind closing the door? It's such a cold day outside." But she said it with a bit of a laugh, like, "It's ridiculous that you two crazy cunts are having this chat in the post office with the door open." And I tell you what.
Yeah.
It did annoy me. For a good week, I prowled the streets with a cosh, looking for all the old ladies that I guess I think, fucking hell, silly old Liam. So, anyway, Dark Man is an incredible film. That's what we were talking about. It's a really incredible film. But what happens in Dark...
He is a Dark Man. He's very dark side to
him. But what happened in Dark Man was there's a bit where... it's about a guy that creates synthetic masks.
Yes.
A bit weird. It's like it's a really great film, but it's also sort of like half a concept. They haven't really kind of really gone with it. It's called his superhero is called Dark Man because he was a scientist who gets blown up and he's very badly scarred. And there's an amazing scene when he comes around with Jenny Agutter and John Landis, so American Werewolf in London, and so he's sort of like he has superhuman strength and endurance to pain because they've severed all of his nerve endings so that. He can't feel the pain of his burnt skin. And so then he goes back to... it's sort of a bit like based on the Phantom of the Opera as well. So he creates all of these masks that look exactly like like Liam Neeson. Mm-hmm. And when he puts it on, he realises that in daylight, they last like 10 minutes. Yes. But when he's in the dark, they last like an extra half hour. I don't know the exact timings. Don't write in and complain. and so there's a bit later on in the film where one of the friends from Wayne's World, who's in Bohemian Rhapsody car scene, he plays one of the bad guys in Darkman, and it's really funny seeing him. And there's a bit where someone is wearing a mask. Someone is wearing a mask, and they're shouting for help, and their teeth are all silver. And they get shot a lot of times and killed. And then it turns out that they're wearing a mask. And when they take the mask off, it's revealed that it's one of his henchmen that's got, what do you call it, gaffer tape, silver duct tape all over his mouth so that he can't communicate. And so they thought it was the guy that they were trying to kill, but it's actually one of his men. And they use the exact same bit in Mission Impossible 2. To the point where it's just kind of like, you know, well, I was watching it and it's quite near the end. So I mean, I was already out of the film, I think, by that point. But then the brakes really do screech there and you go, hang on a minute. You can't even be bothered to come up with your own bits. You're just finding... Well, Tom Cruise did that again, didn't he? So there was Mission Impossible 2 where he steals that off Darkman, and then there's The Mummy...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where they steal the whole sidekick character from American Werewolf in London. You're just like, is this a tribute, or are you basically just planning on the fact
they're
that...
They're both Universal movies, aren't they? It feels like they must have got, like... But then you'd imagine you'd have some sort of John Landis to go, can I have, like, exec producer or something, or...
Because that's a character that I created, yeah, and you've just stolen it.
That I've just gone, that's the... Yeah, it does feel like...
It's really weird.
But yeah, I couldn't work out if it's meant to be like, in the same... It's like going, oh, is it like meant to be in the same sort of world as...
Or is it meant to be kind of like an... Is it meant to be a tribute? You know? But it's not. Is it meant to be like a little wink to the audience? But the audience that are watching Tom Cruise's The Mummy are not the same audience that grew up watching American Werewolf in London. And the audience that are going to see Tom Cruise's Mission Impossible 2... and not the same audience that rented out Darkman from the video show. Do you know what I mean? It feels like bullying.
Yeah.
It feels like someone's come along and gone, I'm having that. But that's mine. What are you going to do about it?
It's just
we've got a $200 million budget. I was reading the other day that Jack and Jill, starring Al Pacino...
Oh, yeah. I've not seen that.
Adam Sandler and Al Pacino. Adam Sandler and Al Pacino. Because we were talking about it the other day, and everyone like always has a go at Adam Sandler for only putting his friends in his films. You know, so like David Spade, Chris Rock, Rob Schneider, and everyone goes, "Oh, he just puts his mates in his films." And I was saying that, you know, if I had a sitcom, the first thing I would do, if I was starting out in comedy and I got a sitcom pilot, the first thing I would do is put all my friends in it.
Yeah,
and I think it's really lovely that he's kept that going. And he just wants to work with people that he likes, and you know, and he's given them work and stuff. And I would do that. I think that's a good thing. But the biggest criticism with him is that he only works with his friends. And you go, no. He works with Oscar-winning Al Pacino in Jack and Jill, and you hated that as well. We all hated it. What's my name? Don Cacino. It's a whole new game.
I've not seen Jack and Jill. Nick forwarded me that clip of Al Pacino, and it made me think, well, this looks like a brilliant film.
I really love, I mean, I've watched that probably five times in the week, the Don Cacino, Al Pacino bit. When
he gives such a performance.
I know, he really goes for it.
He really goes for it. He doesn't phone it in at all. He really goes for it as a funny... It's a really... I was like,
because
that's funny.
Because it is funny. I think Jack and Jill is a terrible film.
Has it got, like, those bits? That's the only funny bit in it?
Oh, it's rubbish. Jack and Jill is a film where Adam Sandler plays Adam Sandler. And I really like Adam Sandler, I have to say, right? But I think that most of my passion and love of Adam Sandler is purely fueled on goodwill that he created from making three films that I like. And then the Netflix special, 100% Fresh, which is... I mean, I love him, right? And also his albums when he was younger. But it's all based on stuff from the mid to late 90s, maybe early 2000s, and Punch Drunk Love. And then he's good in The Meyerowitz Story. And what's the other serious one that he did? Funny People.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't like Funny People as a...
It's
as
another one that's like, it's long, isn't it? It's like nearly 3 hours, isn't it?
It's 3 hours. And what's really weird about it is he takes the piss out of himself by doing kind of like the adverts where he wakes up one day He meets a genie, and then he gets turned into a baby, yes. And he wakes up and he goes, I didn't mean this young. It's funny. And but he's taking the piss out of his own films, yes. In Funny People, and then the very next film he made was Jack and Jill, where he plays himself and his twin sister. And his twin sister, he wears a fat suit, and but it's not like a Rick Baker, Eddie Murphy, Nutty Professor job. He literally wears a fat suit underneath his clothes, puts a wig on and some lipstick, and that is it, right? And they're in like six shots together, where he's playing opposite each other, and the film cost the same amount as Titanic. Titanic was like 180 million, and I think Jack and Jill was something like 160, 170 million.
How did they spend that much money on it?
Well,
on him.
David Spade has a cameo, so I'm sure they all got like paid well.
Wow.
It would have been the best. It would have been.
They just negotiated this thing, like, we want this much.
Yeah, but
it.
Also half the film, he's drinking Pepto-Bismol, you know, the pink
the
indigestion
brand.
Thing. But it's like, but he's got it. It's fully on display at the beginning, and then I think there's either Coke or Pepsi that's sponsoring it. And then there's a huge, and then the film stops so that Al Pacino can do a Dunkin' Donuts advert halfway through it, and you go fucking hell. But I think that the Dunkin' Donuts bit is really funny. It's only recently that I realised how many of the Al Pacino's films that they reference in that bit. Dunkachino. I mean, it's obviously. I mean, it's. I don't think it's so bad. It's good. It's meant to be bad.
No.
It's meant to be bad within the world of the film. It's meant to be bad.
I think it's one of the better Al Pacino films of recent years, based on what I've seen.
Well, when you look at Al Pacino's body of work. From the 2000s, really, Jack and Jill is a very large spike.
It's a good...
Where you go, oh, I'm really enjoying this, and he's invested.
It makes you go, oh, I like Al Pacino. In a way you haven't thought for a long time.
Well, then the next scene is him just like going, burn it, burn it. It's funny. It's just, yeah, anyway. But don't watch the whole film. Well, how did we get onto that?
I don't know. Titanic, though, interestingly, it was another one, wasn't it, that was... another Watergate gate, because it was seen as like a disaster, wasn't it, before it came out?
Titanic gate.
Yeah, it was going to be like, it was another one that where there were comparisons to Waterworld at the time. Like,
why didn't
this
they call
is
it
crazy?
Why didn't they call it Waterworld gate?
Yes, Kevin's gate.
Kevin's gate to rhyme with Heaven's gate, yeah. But Heaven's gate was the name of the film, so it should have been. So do we say Kevin's gate because of Heaven's gate or because of Watergate? Because, you know, do you know what I mean? Because if it was, because the film was called Heaven's Gate. So if we're going, that's a bloody disaster, a bit like Watergate. So it would be the Heaven's Gate gate.
Yes.
And then it would be Kevin's Gate gate. Do you know what I mean? I mean, if anyone's got any complaints, write in and let us know. But
yeah, if you got any experts in, if they can write in and let us know about the gate situation.
About all these gates. Gareth Gates. And remember when he slept with Jordan? Gareth Gate.
Gate.
Gareth Gates Gate.
Gates Gate.
Wow.
What Gareth we, Gates. I haven't thought about him in a very long time.
We'll get to the end of this. I've got to play a song in a minute. We'll get to the end of this.
Let's get to the end of this.
Anyway, this podcast is so much fun that I wanted to be read that. Nisa Stories. If you read out this entirely unwarranted one-star review, your only one-star review, you just wanted your attention-seeking fucking prick, and thus acknowledge that you care very deeply about your iTunes rating, I would gladly change it to the 5 stars you so clearly deserve. You fucking... Do you know what? Leave it as one.
I
want to remember forever that that you're the fucking cunt that finally broke me. This is a 5-star show. It'd be a shame if something were to happen to it, Nick. What?
Was that threatening?
What? So you've got a choice here. Hang on. So I think it goes on.
Okay.
Here, indulge this one ridiculously entitled fan club fan and get yourself another 5-star review, or take that high ground, ignore me, and have this one little star burn into your fragile ego over the coming weeks and months. It's up to you, Nick. I mean, what is this personal fucking attack?
But it's funny.
Also, he spelt Nick capital N, capital I-C-K. And earlier on, he wrote capital I...
And lowercase lower I. Case,
so do you know what I think? What's the name of that fucking prick? What's his name? Albert Ross 1529 or whatever the numbers were. Let me tell you, Albert Ross, you're a little bit heavy-handed when you press the I button.
Yeah, tell him.
Yeah, fucking. You get one star from me, mate.
Yes.
I wrote this one.
Did you?
Yes.
Did you write this yourself?
Yeah, I did. I wrote my own five star review for a show, and it's from Worm director Wrigley Scott.
Is he here today?
I didn't write this. Of course, I didn't write this. I shouldn't have.
Is he in the studio this week, Wrigley Scott?
No, but he's written in. Okay. And the thing there where it says Sir. That's because when you're writing in your review on iTunes, it says title. What do you want to title your review?
Sir Wrigley Scott.
That's his title.
I am writing this review to make up for some of the idiots who have managed to give this podcast 4 stars instead of the standard 5. Get alive, guys. I remember when I was directing the Wormvis ad, thinking I was really onto something here, but much to my disbelief, it didn't go down 100% with the guys in the boardroom either. Mind you, this was way before the days of the internet when every mother, child and their son thought they could get a word in. But my point is, I know how it feels to be blatantly underappreciated with you in your own lifetime. G.I. Worm, Wormend, Kingdom of Wormven, Prometheus Worm, and don't get me started on Alien Cover Worm. People can be pricks, what can I say? Keep up the 5-star entertainment, lads, and keep being an inspiration to lots of worms out there like me. And I'll see you at the movies.
Or the Wormvies. Thank you, Wrigley Scott, there. It's really nice.
I think that's my favourite thing in 10 months of Fan Club.
What, that Wrigley Scott gave
Wrigley
us a
Scott.
Review?
So I think it's really nice of him. He's a big director. He's not got a lot of time.
He's not a big director. Like, he's a tiny director.
but he's taken time out of his busy schedule to write us a little fan letter. Thanks, Wrigley.
Thanks, Wrigley. Right, I'll play a song and then we'll have a guest.
Come and freeze me with your charm.
FUBAR Radio.
And we're back. You're not literally going to pick up any slack off me today, are you? Even now you're looking at me like you don't have a microphone in front of you.
Hello.
Is it radio?
Is it? Well, I don't know.
It never has been, has it?
It has been technically radio.
Only because our voices come out of that wonderful invention created by Marconi. the inventor of the radio. Okay, well, have you got anything else you want to say before we bring our guest on?
No, I thought we were going to go straight to the guest.
Going to go straight to the guest. Okay, we'll bring the guest on then. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined in the studio live over the phone.
Down the line.
By comedian Ahir Shah.
Hello.
Here he is. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
It's been up and down. this week, but I'm on the mend. It was good.
You hurt yourself.
Thank you for asking.
Right.
Where are you?
I am currently pottering around my living room. I've successfully ironed a shirt.
Where do you live?
In East London.
So you could have come in.
I live in East London as well.
Okay. It's not your fault, I hear, but I thought that the point of having phone guests was because there'd be sort of like... okay, right, fine. Okay, this is not your fault, I hear, but you're in East London, are you? It is a bit of a trek to get into the studio. So for me, it's just 5 minutes around the corner, but for now, he has to travel from one side of... He's gone. Well, I hear Shah will be.
That is a one-star review.
I hear Shah will be performing at 100 Hearts, a night of comedy, starring Rob Brydon, Sarah O'Brien, Harry Enfield, Amit Jalili, Rachel Paris, and Angus Dayton, hosted by Clive Anderson. So good luck with that, I hear. Oh, man.
What a wonderful review.
Hello, are you there?
Yes, I am. Anyway. That was a call failure rather than an explicit hang-up on
okay.
my front.
It couldn't have
been better timing.
Okay, as I was saying, so anyway, we normally try and get people that aren't in London to do the phone, but Natalie's obviously broken her own protocol there, that's fine.
So when I said I live in Stratford, I meant upon Avon.
Okay.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, well, say hello to the bard for me.
I shall.
What are you promoting? You're doing this 100 Hearts a Night of Comedy, aren't you?
Yes, on the 13th of February, and this is a huge lineup of a whole bunch of comedians. You've got hosted by Clive Anderson, and there's sort of Darren Finn, Majalili, Desiree Birch, Ken Cheng. I'm just thinking of the names that I can immediately
Rachel Paris.
Remember Rachel Paris
and
on,
Angus
yes.
Dayton. What is it, a stand-up gig?
Yes, it is a stand-up gig. But
is Angus Dayton doing stand-up?
I don't know. Maybe he's going to find a new career. Maybe he's going to be muscling in on our turf.
Have you ever met Angus Dayton before?
I've not met Angus Dayton. Is he nice?
I met him. He was lovely to me.
Oh, my God. I mean, my knees went. It was literally like meeting James Bond. He's so suave and sophisticated and charming.
Yeah, I found him really lovely.
I was just like, oh, my God, Angus Dayton. He is TV's Mr. Sex.
Cracks the house while he is.
Oh, yeah, he's
brace yourself, though. Don't go for a handshake unprepared.
Don't go for a handshake and accidentally grab his cock. You just absolutely just keep it professional, above the waistline, and just and maintain eye contact. But you're in for a treat if you've never met Angus Dayton before. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Just touring around and living on trains largely at the moment. But
so you're doing your own show as well, but you're good enough. You've come on here to promote a charity gig. But you actually got your own career. What a lovely man are here.
So this is I'm going to talk a bit about this now, if that's all right.
Say that again.
I'll talk a bit about this this charity gig now, if that's all right.
Yeah, go for it.
So yeah, it's on the 13th of Feb, so very soon, at the London Palladium, which is a very swish place. I've actually never been, but I mean it definitely sounds fancy.
The London Palladium. Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for Sunday night at the London Palladium. It's big. It's showbiz.
It's showbiz.
Yeah. I mean, now that's my set. So you've already heard everything. Sorry. I was just going to do that on repeat for 5-7 minutes.
And you know what they say? You only played the London Palladium twice in your career. Once on the way up, and then once again when you're even further up the ladder. So good luck. I've seen some pretty good stuff there. I went to see Cats at the London Palladium once. Bloody hell. I mean, ask to get a behind-the-scenes tour and maybe if you're lucky, take a photo of any of the cat costumes that they've left lying around.
Right.
Do you have that, though? When you play a thing?
Angus talking about cat costumes.
Oh, man. Get Angus in a cat costume.
Do you have that when you play a venue like that, though? Do you romanticise it and the history of a place like that?
Are you asking me on it?
Yeah, just like no, you.
Yeah, he's got
right.
He's got another 2 hours to talk to me.
I don't think I play fancy enough venues to romanticise. Really, I think that like imagine the history of this place.
Yeah.
So many years where touring comedians on exactly my level have been here doing the same and drinking the same cup of tea.
Hey, you wouldn't be going like, I wonder who else has played the Builder's Arms.
Exactly. Who has treaded the boards of this strange deconsecrated church that isn't the original art centre?
Where are you touring at the moment?
So tonight I'm in Cambridge, and tomorrow I'm in Leamington, and then just all around the country.
And what show is this?
This is a show called Duffer, and it is not done for charity. It is done for my financial benefit.
Sure.
Exclusively, and give me money.
Don't feel bad about promoting that. I think you've been very good about promoting...
It's your job, you know. But we've been kinging together for, 10 years now?
Yeah, God, we would have met when I was.
I just remember we played Scrabble at the was it the Star of Kings?
It was the Star of Kings, yeah.
But was it called Star of Kings? I think it was called the Cross Kings back then.
Cross
was it?
Kings, I think.
It's called the Cross Kings, and then they renamed it Star of Kings. Me, you, and my dad played Scrabble once, and you both contested that QI wasn't a word. And I just want to say now that QI is a word. It is accepted in the Scrabble dictionary. So in your face, I hear in my dad from 10 years ago.
You know what?
And that's why you're here today.
Cards on the table, or rather tiles on the board. You are absolutely right. I hold my hands up. I got that one wrong. And nowadays, I routinely use QI as a Scrabble word.
Well, you're very welcome, because you can get a lot of points. It's at least 11 points that you get for it. Well, maybe if you're using a blank tile, then you can get between 1 and 10 points.
Sure.
But who's using a blank tile to write QI? Who's when you're filling in for the queue? Why would you do that? But because, you know, obviously you're more intelligent than me, my dad took your side. And it was one of the rare occasions when I was right when it came to grammar and language. So
no, you absolutely nailed it.
Yeah, good. Right, glad we cleared that up.
You don't really think about it anymore, though, do you?
That's really the entire purpose of this phone interview. There's nothing to do with promoting the charity show or my book or anything like that.
No, we've got your career stuff out of the way. That's fine. Okay. And now we're back to
Scrabble.
Back to Scrabble. I'm a big fan of Scrabble. What are you a big fan of here?
Oh, I'll tell you what I really love is Scrabble that is
live. You're breaking up a bit there.
Oh, really? Okay. Sorry, I did that.
Oh, God. Oh no, I don't know what to do. Hello, a here.
I think a here's died.
A here, a here.
I think his house has got under a tunnel. Oh,
that's nice. But do you know what?
Anticlimactic.
I'm glad I sorted out that Scrabble thing.
Yeah, it did.
It's really annoyed me.
That you're playing a trick.
Oh, he's here.
Oh, you are here.
Here.
Oh.
Oh, we genuinely couldn't hear you. Why would we do that? Did you think we were tooling with you?
Yeah.
Like in The Last Jedi.
I thought I was being pranked by the bigger boys.
No, no, absolutely not. We've been going for almost as long as each other, yeah, but you started when you were very young.
Yeah, I think of you as being, you were like 18 or something, weren't you? 17, 18 when you started.
Yeah.
I remember you at those gigs, Lion's Den gigs, 10 years ago.
At as a young, as a very young man. Then, yeah.
Cross Keys, yeah.
Yeah.
And now, so Duffy, your show now, that's a story show, isn't it? So it's different from the usual stand-up shows you do.
What? Sorry?
The show you're doing now, Duffer, isn't that more of a story show, right? So it's different from the kind of stand-up gigs you normally do or the kind of shows you normally do.
Well, so with all sorts of maintained narrative and story throughout it, but certainly this one, more sort of personal story and, like, okay,
it's something.
It's
this is a really bad line.
Maybe
it's not your fault. And
we
it's
could
not,
have got you in probably as well, which is what makes.
it's not your fault, and it's certainly not our fault. We've been let down again by our producer and technology.
We've been let down by the gremlins.
I mean, that didn't help, Nat. So, I think we're just... sorry, I hear. We're going to end the conversation.
That's all right.
We're going to terminate the conversation. but just say, you're on tour at the moment. He's been going for just as long as me, so he's just as good as me as a comedian. So don't you worry about quality. he's doing this...
100 Hearts.
Amazing night of comedy at the London Palladium on the 13th of February, the day before Valentine's Day. So get in there... one day before Valentine's Day, because you know that if you go there on Valentine's Day, it's going to be absolutely rammed with couples.
and
everyone's got, like, vouchers.
Absolutely ridiculous. There'll be a guy selling flowers, overpriced. But so go and see it on the 13th, and go and see Angus Deaton do some stand-up.
Yeah.
In a cat costume.
I think that's mental.
Yeah. And tickets from £35 from londonpalladium.co.uk.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for coming on.
I mean, that's just not... that was a perfect end to a terrible interview. No. He's still here, Natalie. Can you just say...
I mean, we've got technology. We've got no...
Have I done it? I've pressed the button. Now it's red. He's gone. He has gone. I mean, that was... bloody awful. He's in fucking
Stratford.
He's in East.
He's a stop on for me.
Never eat shredded wheat. He's in East London. He's in East London. We could have had him in. Mm. Oh, because if that's the case, if that's what we're doing now, Natalie, just getting people from down the road, then I might as well just phone in. Right? The one thing that I've never done is phoned in a fucking show, except for 2 weeks ago. But the pills, man, they were so strong.
But to be fair, I'm phoning in this one, I think.
I mean, I've never phoned in a single fucking show, Natalie. For those of you that are listening at home, I am narrowing my eyes at Nathaniel with the implication that he has phoned in a couple of these shows, but never me. So that's what really annoyed me about that fucking one-star review, him kissing your fucking ass and him saying about Uncle.
Yeah.
You know, you wish you had Uncle, mate. Not you, the one-star guy.
Well, I do wish I had
No, you don't. It's an albatross. It hangs around your neck. What? Why is the...
Who's this now?
Has Nathaniel just hung up on me? Has Fubar just hung up on me? I even put the fucking fader... Oh, it's that one. It's the wrong line. All right, fine. You showed me one...
Go and see Ahir.
It's 2 minutes to... So go and see Ahir.
Go and see
Ahir. It's great.
Good. And go and see A Night of 100 Hearts.
I mean, come on, mate.
A Night of Comedy.
Just have it in front of you and read it off. Phil McIntyre Entertainment presents... Well, that's why I wasn't booked. 100 Hearts, A Night of Comedy. Starring... Phil McIntyre acts. So it's all for a good cause. What's the cause? It's an Irish group of girls. So
and one boy as well.
And one boy, Jim. Jim Corr.
Jim Corr.
The drummer. Is he the drummer? Mm. Is he the bass player?
I think he's a drummer. Oh, do you know what? I think I know less about the cause than I think I do. I'm not 100% on that. Which the lineup is, of the cause.
Yeah. Okay. If any of you have any thoughts on the cause, please phone in.
I remember in the 90s, the papers, when they talk about the cause, it'd always be the cause. Or as I call them, the cause, wasn't it? That's what they'd always say about them.
Yeah.
The cause.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The cause.
'90s newspapers, I miss them, innit?
Yeah, yeah, they're great.
I miss them. I miss them. Let's count down to when Hermione's 16.
Oh, God, yeah, there was all
fucking
that.
Hell. Just absolutely. Let's count down to when Laura Church is legal. You go like, oh, right, yeah, okay, sure. Oh, God, that's absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. The 12-year-old star of Harry Potter. Let's count down to when we can fuck her. You go, oh, right, okay. And then they have the nerve to have a go at Rolf Harris for waving at some children. Absolutely unbelievable. Oh, my God. The world is fucked.
Yeah, keep it.
Yeah, but like, but that's the thing. People are so judgmental. But like, if you look back at the state of newspapers in the 90s, I mean, literally, no one has a leg to fucking stand on.
No, absolutely.
One of the most it's a absolute blot on the history of newspapers. The whole countdown stuff that they did with Laura Church and Charlotte Church and Laura Church was a girl who went to school with. We were actually counting that down. Charlotte Church and
Emma Watson.
Yeah. Anyway, it's just
disgraceful.
It's disgraceful. But
oh, we're told that Jim Corr played guitar, piano, keyboards, vocals, and was the oldest member of the cause. Do you mean oldest member by age, or
he was the first guy
that joined the cause? So that suggests he's got no mates, and his band was just entirely made up of his own sisters.
Jim Corr played guitar, piano, keyboards. I mean, I would just say piano or keyboards. I wouldn't say piano and keyboards.
I think he's trying to build his part. Oh. And keyboards.
That's a bit like I do running and jogging.
And walking. Do them all.
Okay, so we're going to play a song now. I'm going to tell you how it is. I'm going to play a song now, mm-hmm. And we're going to go next door. We're going to meet our next guest, and then we're going to bring him on, and then we're going to have a good old time. I can only guarantee two of those three options. Right, so what song am I playing? What one? Oh, fuck. Look, I just need your assistance here, Natalie.
Is it my one?
I don't need you to, when you pipe up, to have that much attitude, right? I'm genuinely asking a question. I'm scared. I'm scared and confused, and we're on live radio. I just want to just press the right button. Dave.
Oh, Dave Edmonds.
Dave Edmonds. Girls Talk. Is this your choice?
Don't come any nearer. My vision of you.
Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
We're back. Did we take a photo? We did take a photo, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah, we did take a photo. We're joined in the studio now by comedian Laura Lex.
Hi.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
We've just realised that we shared a venue 10 years ago at the Edinburgh Festival.
Yeah.
It's interesting because we've never met, or we've sort of... Laura's met Nick briefly in...
Well, we would have seen each other every day for an entire month 10 years ago. And then at Macfest, we shared a dressing room.
Yeah. Last year.
Was that at the Tabernacle?
Yes. I don't know what anything's
called. Have you ever
called.
Done Mac before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What room was I in? In the courtyardy bit. In the.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Oh, that was just before I did my work in progress that you came to see.
Oh, yes.
Where I'd just done The Reluctant Landlord and I hadn't had any time to write a show.
Yeah.
So I...
He's talked about having some foe in a... Birmingham Station or something for an hour.
Yeah, because that's what I'd just done on my way to McCuntleth.
It was an hour about the train journey I just had.
it was not a good hour. And then you were in the dressing room, and then you did your show in Macfest.
Yeah.
How did that go?
Macfest was quite hard, actually, because it went all right. But, you know, something goes all right, but you think, oh, fuck, and that's Mac people only being all right.
Yes.
So if that had been normal people, that would have been painful.
So it's a festival that's got a reputation for being very lovely and very kind of pro sort of comedy fans. So people are like primed to enjoy it.
Yeah. You know that what you've made is it's not... They're really trying to help you with it.
But what I would say about that is that reputation, I think, stems from the first two to three years.
Do you think?
And I think, because in my head, I always think, oh, Mac, that's lovely. And it is a lovely festival. Don't get me wrong. Our friend Henry Widdicom runs it. And it's a great festival that, you know, we did like the first year.
Yeah, how's their first
and
year?
And the first couple of 3 years, but as an act, they were magical. There's only like four rooms there. And then it's got bigger and bigger. Mm. And in actual fact, the audiences have become increasingly... hard to please.
or just have reasonable expectations. Reasonable expectations of paying money to see something for an hour and hoping they might get something more than...
Whereas I think the first 3 years people were just happy to be there.
Yeah, they really did feel like it.
So I think that it's not just you that thinks that. I think it is. I think as an act, it is actually quite a difficult because they didn't like me for that hour. There was a woman that was furious with me. I think she was just really hungry, and we were in McCuntleth, and there isn't a foe there.
Yes.
So probably that's or a fur.
I think it is fur.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
It's fur. Fur.
Fur.
Yeah.
Fur.
Yeah. Absolutely. What was the name of that show that you did at the
Trying.
Rat Pack?
At the Rat Pack. Yeah, no, yeah. Banterland.
Banterland.
That was.
That probably seemed all right then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that was just when banter was just coming over the horizon of being a fun new word for people to play with.
Yeah. Right. But what's Banterland? Like Wonderland?
I guess so.
It just a split hour, a stand-up?
Yeah, there were five of us, because I think I replaced someone for the second 2 weeks of the run, and we'd all done stand-up together at uni. And
was it a uni show? Did you come from uni to...
Yeah, we weren't affiliated with the university. They made it quite clear. but we had all been on the same course.
Were you at uni? Were you uni age at the time?
Just left, I think. Yeah, that must have been the year I graduated. So, like 21, 22? Mm.
And were you young enough and keen enough that you had a brilliant time? Or was it one of those things where it just destroyed any...
No, I think we had a really good time, from what I remember. Like, I didn't do the full month, so I did, 2 weeks. But we lived in Leith, so it was getting the bus in and out
that's
every day.
That's what we
did
that year.
That's the new, how, you know, when you really don't understand how the festival works.
Yeah.
But I think it was all right. We had a good time.
It was a PBH venue, wasn't it? So we all had... you weren't there for the first week then, but we all had to meet up on the first... All the acts met up on the first week. It was at the Rat Pack Piano Bar, and the guy that ran it was a guy called Mark, and he was really lovely.
We've really handsome.
We've kept in contact, and
tell him he's really handsome.
Well, he's probably listening, we've kept in contact. I can't remember the last time I saw him, but every time I go, it was like every time I went up to Edinburgh that I saw him. And he played guitar for me on the last day. because he was a really good musician. And still is. But why am I saying this? So we, on the first day we had to put the curtains up on the thing because it was just an, it was a bar and
I
it was
remember.
Like an open bar with no chairs. So the first day we had to put all the curtains up. And then there wasn't any stage lighting, so I went out and I bought two desk lights and put them on the floor and shone them up so that it made it feel like a stage. And then, it was in the, it was right at the end. If you think of like Princes Street, it's Princes Street, isn't it? If you think of Princes Street like an arm, it was just at the elbow, away from civilization. And that's where we
down
were.
Down in a little cellar.
In the cellar. Right at cellar bar. And so that was where me and Laura were performing, and then you, Nathaniel, were performing
further away,
just like towards the forearm, weren't
we? But and we were miles away from where anything else in the festival was happening,
and it was so hard to fly there. Like my memory of that year is trying to fly like round that area, which is really out of the tourist
It was pointless. It
and
was
somebody telling
pointless.
Me to go home because I was making Edinburgh dirty.
Yeah,
with my flyery and just feeling like
like some days it would be like you'd maybe three or four people had walked past the hour before, and you'd just be. It was grim as anything.
Really
and
dismal.
You'd sort of get to that point where you'd almost wish you didn't have three people because you felt like you'd probably have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas if it was just one or none, then you could be like, oh, well, we'll go home.
I did quite well audience-wise.
It's because you gave out free hugs, if I remember correctly.
Oh, fuck you. I never gave out free fucking hugs. Fucking hell. Although, no offence to the comedians that do that, but, oh, God.
I would feel creepy doing that.
Well, now you would, but back then, I was not giving out fucking free hugs. And let's just say I was giving out free hugs. I hardly think that that it was standing room only, a room full of people just because they were waiting for a hug. They all looked really annoyed because they had to sit through an hour of excellent comedy to just get to the point at the end when I hugged them all as they left. I don't think so, Laura.
It's almost remarkable we haven't run into each other more.
Yeah. I do know what, because I don't live in London. It took me a really long time to do anything. Brighton.
Oh.
It took me ages to do stuff in London. And I find the gigs in London are the hardest ones to like, get in with unless you don't want money.
Where did you go to uni?
Canterbury.
So, but were you born in Brighton?
No, Somerset.
Oh, that's a nice place as well, isn't it?
I've moved around a bit. I did live in London for a bit, but then
I lived in Brighton for a bit. I lived in Brighton for a year. It was the worst year of my life.
Oh.
Sorry, that's changed now. Second worst year. Second worst year of my life.
I think my year living in Charlton was probably the worst year of my life.
What's the worst year of your life, Nat?
It's coming. I'd say probably
2019. I was going to say 1999.
I would say 2014 was my worst year.
Why is that?
Oh, everything went wrong.
Yeah. No, that was my 2005 when I lived in Brighton.
Why?
And then 2015 or 14 again. That was a terrible year.
Same. Snap.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, mine would either be 2017 or 2009.
I mean, this sounds like a horrible link, but given that you've got a show
about having a miserable year,
I'd imagine this seems
but
like a.
It was that as bad as the mouse infested house and the police escorts home whenever they played football.
Nathaniel, I found this out the other day. Nathaniel is terrified of mice.
Yeah, absolutely phobic. I can't handle it.
I have a very specific fear of mice, and it's a fear that they will get in me while I'm asleep.
I do think the same things, but it's not a fear. It's more of a wish.
Just leaving a chocolate
every time. Every time I go to bed, I just sit with my ass in the air, and I think maybe tonight will be the night that the mice will get me.
Smeared up with peanut butter. Yeah. Come on.
And some kitchen roll, the actual... cardboard innard of a kitchen roll.
Fucking.
Are you afraid of all mice? Like, I love watching mice on the underground. Like when you're waiting for the train.
I can handle it.
But that's when we found out, wasn't it? Because we were getting the tube together, and there was a mouse on the underground, and you sort of got a bit tense. Wasn't that when
we found out? Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, I'm always talking about it. I think.
I've known you for 12 years.
Well, I guess
years,
if I can see one,
known that.
And I'll go like.
I'm like that.
I'm like that with some things, but I would never say that publicly so that people don't put them in an envelope and send them to me.
Okay. Well, please don't send me any mice in an envelope.
No,
they wouldn't send a mouse in an envelope, would they?
Well, they could send a dead one. I wouldn't even want to see a dead one. I find them creepy.
Oh, my God.
Stop it.
Oh.
Stop it.
Oh, my God. Technically, that's a rat.
That's a rat,
Natalie.
Isn't it?
Oh my God, that's a...
That is horrible.
That is a horrible... It's an illustration as well, though.
Yeah, but I didn't like it.
No, I didn't like it either. Natalie was tooling with us.
You're in a mouse-infested house.
Yeah, we moved into a house off Gumtree as the first house out of uni. You know, when you just go and just have to be in London near the gigs and you just live anywhere, and it was horrible.
Where was it?
Charlton Village. Yeah. Charlton Village? So I used to say Greenwich. Right, wasn't Greenwich. It was, yeah.
When you say infested, what are we talking?
Oh, yeah. So talk us through this everywhere. House. Oh, it was just horrible. It was one of those ones with, the electricity on a meter card. So you had to, we just have power cuts all the time. And if the news agents wasn't home, we were just cold and in the dark until it was. Mm. And then, we lived with all these strangers. And I had this... it was just, they were not pleasant. They really hated me and loved my housemate that I'd moved in with. And then, we had lino in the bedroom. And then this mouse, there were several mice. And then one night, this mouse got stuck in the bin and couldn't get out. And I was just lying in bed, too scared to go and help it get out of the bin in case it got on me. But also too scared to fall asleep because all I could hear was this mouse, pinballing around the bin. Mm. Oh, it was a horrible house.
Yeah.
That sounds... disgusting.
It sounds like my house and Seven Sisters that I lived with my friend Rich. We had mice, and also we didn't have any money. So, and we had different lives. I did comedy at night, and he worked, he did night shifts. So when I was, he was working 12-hour night shifts. So he'd do 4 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, just as I was sort of leaving the house to go to a gig, and then he would kind of, but we had mice, and he used to smoke a lot of weed, and I used to drink a lot, so we had very different lifestyles, but we both used to smoke cigarettes, and we were lazy, and we didn't do anything about the mice, we just had mice going around. So we both smoked cigarettes, we were just trying to kill them all with passive smoking.
You're playing the long game.
Great, yeah, playing the long game. We'll get them. We'll get them one day. But those were the glory days.
Oh, God.
All gone
I
now.
I actually find those stories even make me...
Sorry. We've just kind of gone, what's your biggest fear? Let's chat about it.
What about that footage of Amy Winehouse with the mice in her hair? Didn't you not like that?
I've never, don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, there's a Pete Doherty and Amy Winehouse used to keep mice in Amy's hair.
What are you talking about? What, there's a
it's a video.
Actual...
It's a video. And Amy Winehouse had mice going around her hair.
In her hair? What, in real life? Is this a joke?
No, in real life.
Was it a pet mouse?
Probably.
Oh, it looks like it's a pet mouse, and she puts it in a...
Yeah, but I've never seen this picture before.
That picture's got a cage, so it lives in a cage sometimes. And then
I've never seen it with a cage. I just knew that she used to put mice in her hair. And then they released the video online, and everyone was horrified by it. But, look at those tiny little mice.
God, they are tiny, aren't they?
Yeah.
Still, disgusting.
Size of a fingertip.
Absolutely horrible things.
Still, yeah.
Size of a fingertip.
Yeah, but those are baby mice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. You can see the picture. See how small they are.
Oh, sorry, you probably can't see the picture.
They're tiny.
Tiny mice.
I don't want those in my hair, thank you.
No, but I don't think she put those on. She let them grow up a bit and then she put them in her hair. Anyway, so you're doing a show at the moment called Trying, yes?
Yeah.
And it's on at the Soho Theatre, London, on the 20th to the 23rd of February at 7:30 p.m. If you get there at 7:30 a.m., then you'll be 12 hours early. 7:30 p.m. is perfect. I don't want to go and see something at 10 o'clock, come out at 11 o'clock, and then I've got to go home.
No, I don't that week because the trains from Brighton aren't working, so
all right.
Quite happy to be on a train at 9.
Brighton was the place where my dreams went to die, so let's not keep going on about Brighton.
I'm so sorry, but I feel really personally responsible for this.
Don't feel personally responsible for it, but I imagine that you're in the mix there somewhere. But 7:30 is great because you come out at 8:30 and then you go for a drink in the bar afterwards and you have a little chat. Don't you worry about 7:30. I love it.
But are you worried that it'll be a thing where you know you've got to get back to Brighton, but you might have some friends show up at the gig?
Oh, I don't think so. You know when you're at a stage with a show where you've rinsed your friends coming to see it as many possible times as you can?
You say
this
that.
Is the bit where it's only people I do not know coming.
Okay.
My friend John, who I was best man at his wedding, and I've known him since secondary school, he came to see Fuckfest, and I think it was this year, and I think it's the first time he's ever seen me live.
Right.
Really?
And I've known him all my life.
So you say it. I think that's quite fun there, though. Like, when somebody likes you and gives as much of a shit about your career as you do about theirs.
Sure. Or you could look at it from he's only going to come and see me when he knows that I'm going to be good.
Sure.
So he's left it 15 years.
And you've picked sensible friends then that don't want to sit through.
Yeah, but they're not supporting you in the difficult early years, are they? They're just literally glory hounds jumping in on an already full bandwagon. Thank you, John.
Sack off them, mate.
What's your show about?
It's about depression and not being able to have a baby. It's really funny.
might give that one a miss.
Yeah, 7:30 is too early for this kind of bullshit.
No, is it tough to promote then because of that? Can you go on things like this and go?
It's really tough to promote unless you want an audience of people that are nodding already and going, oh, that sounds very, very worthy and worth my time. So trying to get an audience of people that actually want an hour of stand-up is the hard thing. Because I found this in Edinburgh, that because I've never done a show that was personal before. The first week I was having a great time and everybody, when I got to the bit where I was like, about 10 minutes in, I went, this is what's happened, this is what we're going to talk about. People going, oh, all right then. And then as the reviews and stuff start to come out, then you start getting audience of people going, hello, darling, what's your pain?
They ruin it.
Yeah, and then I've got 10 minutes at the top of all this, like, really bright, bubbly, like, boop, boop, ba-doo, here we go. And the whole show is really quite high octane. It's not like, thought-provoking and let's sit quietly. It's mostly, like, quite edged, like, dark jokes. And it just, so that's what's difficult, is trying to convince people that it is about depression and stuff. And it's not like here's 40 minutes on growing up in the 90s and then I'll reveal it with 15 minutes to go and we'll do four jokes about it. It's the whole show's about it, but it is, I promise, it's stand-up. It's
Of course, but also
misery.
I think that people misinterpret people with problems where you go, oh, I've written a show about depression. But that doesn't mean that it's a depressing show about depression.
Yeah.
Mm. I think you can still be really funny and light about your own experiences just because things are issue-based. And if you go through... I experience depression and I write jokes about it to help me deal with it. But also, it doesn't mean that I walk around being miserable about it. It's just kind of like, I've got a different attitude. I'm not precious about it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think people just automatically assume that, for instance, if you've got an eating disorder, then it's kind of like, well, we've got to creep around that and we can't really discuss the eating disorder because it might actually upset you. I mean, I've had eating disorders in the past. And I think you just think people walk on eggshells around you because they're worried to bring it up. But in actual fact, I've got quite an open attitude towards that stuff because I've dealt with it.
Yeah. Also, I think like there's the thing I found like with that Mac preview last year that there was a real danger with this show early on where I was doing previews and trying to be too positive to counterbalance the subject, and I looked like, you know when you meet a bloke that's just got divorced, he's going, I never liked the bitch, I'm fine, like, and going way OTT trying to be happy.
Had the best time of my life.
Yeah, I've never been happier.
I can have sex every night of the week now
in my car
if I pay for it.
So I think like a few times that's how I was coming across.
But was that, this is probably maybe too, but is that also, was there an element to you to it where you were feeling a bit like that?
Yeah, probably. Like trying, because I've never done any stand-up like this before. My stand-up is always so cheerful and like, boop, 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 stupid voices running around playing little scenes out and games and things. And I like that. And so there was this thing of not quite knowing what the persona and the voice
and
was.
And what the level is. You've just got to find the level of what's the right amount. Yeah. But you can't do anything going, I'm fine. No, really, I'm fine.
And you don't end up doing an impression of another comedian. So you're trying to work out how you do it. But then also, like, reassuring. And I've got that awful stand-up thing of telling an audience how they feel, you know? And you start going, you guys aren't enjoying this, are you? And then they start going, are we not? Oh, yeah, we're probably not, are we? I do that all the time.
That's weird because, you know, generally they are enjoying it.
Yes.
And they are, and they get upset with you because they're just like, oh, fuck you. Yeah. I am enjoying it, actually.
I think that happens a lot at previews in general, though, right? That people are kind of enjoying it, but because you know it's not as good as it ought to be,
you're slightly ashamed of yourself. You shouldn't have left the house that day. Whatever you've got on offer for these people is pathetic. And you regret all of your life decisions.
To me personally?
Yeah, I'm talking. Sorry, no, this isn't directed anywhere near you, Lex. I just wanted to bring something up with Nathaniel here.
You went to a preview. He came to a preview and was furious.
Well, I'm just really pissed off about this one-star review we got earlier, saying that you were hilarious on that podcast. I think it's absolutely fucking gobsmacking. If I'm honest, I went, oh, Josh Widdicombe there. It's absolutely gobsmacking.
Interesting as well that you said that you were saying in Edinburgh, once reviews were out, you got audiences that almost wanted it to be like a sort of.
Oh, it's just, it's a double-edged sword, though, isn't it?
Yeah, you need of course.
It's good to have reviews that you can put them on the poster, but so many of them just. I'm not going to name them. But so many of them just literally describe what happens. Yeah. It's just like, just give us a fucking poster quote and let us staple it on. And then, you know, and then that synergy, isn't it?
Yeah, and I read an interesting thing about, like, somebody wrote a defence of, like, reviewing comedy about how comedy was the hardest thing to review because comedians don't want them giving away the jokes and stuff. And then they compared it to reviewing a book and how, like, a book wouldn't mind if you said the themes in it. And I was kind of thinking about it and thinking, like, comedians don't mind if you say the themes. But when you give away a joke, a stand-up show is kind of made up of about 90 different plot twists. That's the point of a joke. A joke is always a plot twist. So if you'd written a book and someone gave away any of the three plot twists, you'd be furious. And it's the same with a show. You've put in all of those plot twists for a certain reason, and if any one of them falls flat, the whole rhythm changes. So you cannot give away a single punchline or reveal from one of these shows because the dynamic is so delicate in an hour of stand-up. It's so hard to keep people interested. That's why they should be 40 minutes, not an hour. And if you give away any of those, just the whole thing changes.
Well, I agree. And it's a bit like, go and see The Sixth Sense if you like films where the main character's a ghost.
Yes, exactly.
Because he gets shot at the beginning. Yeah. The other thing is, what is the point in ruining a joke?
Yeah.
Because I think the point of ruining a joke is so that you can somehow bask in the glory of that joke by telling it secondhand.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason to ruin a joke in a review. What is basically giving away the joke going to add to the show? Yeah. You're basically going, oh, God, it was a good joke, so I'm going to kind of like...
But I think that there's some reviewers, and not all of them, like obviously a lot of them...
Oh, there are some excellent reviewers, and there are some awful reviewers, and we'll let them work out who they are.
But I don't like those when they do the top 10 best jokes of the Fringe things. Mm. And again, I know that's PR.
I won the Dave
Award.
That's why
I mean it's ridiculous.
fuck you, hilarious. And I was doing bunny ears for the listeners at home. I won the Dave Award and everyone was like going, oh, you've won. And all of it, I didn't enter a fucking competition.
Yes.
They came along, they sat in the dark, wrote one of my jokes down, put it on the internet and didn't ask me. I didn't know anything about it. Sure, I won £1,000 and bought a laptop. But, I mean, I couldn't use that joke anymore. Do you know what I mean? And I got loads of abuse from people because I'd won the joke.
But that's it, because when they publish them out of context, it's like a joke and people go, well, that's not that funny.
Yeah.
And it's because the person that's seen it and put it in that list has seen the comedian telling that joke in the context of all these other things. And it's also, you know, if you told a joke that Harry Hill did, you'd probably be like, well, that's not that great.
Yeah.
It's because Harry Hill's told it in a way that's funny.
Exactly.
Because he brings something to it that elevates that joke from what would be like, you know, essentially like a children's joke or something. And then suddenly it's sort of brilliant because he's sort of Harry Hill telling that joke. It doesn't. They're not jokes that necessarily work out of context.
No.
Which is the whole point of what kind of stand-ups are, right? They're not. It's not like you could give them a script to anyone and say, read that, and people would be like, oh, it's funny.
But that's what's so cool about live comedy, I think. I really think live comedy is just the best art form because it's so straight up between, like, a whole room full of people. And I love it, you know, when you're in a club gig or something and somebody suddenly takes offence and kicks off and they are so sure that you've been racist or sexist or whatever you've been, and the rest of the audience and you are all going, what? How have have you got that out of this? But this person's incensed, and you think, like, if even in this dynamic of one person saying a thing and you can hear it, no second telling, you've understood it to be a totally different thing than these 300 other people. This is where reported tellings of jokes and shows and X and blah, that's how you understand how everything goes mental. It's because you're like, well, people just do not think in the same way, and stuff suddenly becomes something it never was.
Yeah.
Mm. And it is an art form.
It bloody is.
So we're going to play a song now. speaking of hecklers, I watched Norm Macdonald deal with a teacher in his audience that was heckling him. Long story short, I'll just tell you how it ends. No, that's a joke.
Two stars.
It's really funny. It's really funny. He's doing a routine about teachers, and then a teacher gets offended. And it's really funny. Google it. Anyway, I'm going to play... what's this song that you've picked for us, Laura?
I don't know. What have I picked?
Everlasting Love.
Oh, that's a nice song. Yeah, that's just a nice, cheerful song for a Friday.
Is that why you picked it?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. Normally it's meant to be...
You look so furious.
Well, normally it's meant to be your favourite song. That should have been explained to you by now.
Oh,
too.
I don't really like music, but yeah, this can be my
favourite
song.
I don't really like music?
It's totally my favourite song.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So you're the sort of person that would go to a music night. Because I always talk about big value comedy. And it was just like, it's big value comedy. It should be good value comedy, but never mind. But big value comedy is value, and there's a lot of it. And I was on in the middle, and people hated me. And you go, yeah, but it's still comedy. It's just not the sort of comedy that you like. Yeah. And I always think about...
And the value is, if you like the other two, that's free, isn't it?
Well, that's what I did a gig with Josh Whitcomb and James Acaster once at the Lyric Theatre in Hammersmith. And this guy came up to me and he said, you are the worst comedian I've ever seen. So in front of my girlfriend's parents as well. He came up to me and goes, he was just shaking with rage, going, you're the worst comedian I have ever seen. I'm absolutely furious. Whatever that was not comedy. And I said, yeah, but the other two were good, weren't they? And that pissed him off even more. He's going, what do you want me to do? You didn't like me. But the other two were good, weren't they? He goes, what? And I said, well, I'm terribly sorry, but it's still early, so if you go home now, you could probably get something else out of your evening.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like, I don't know what else you could say, really.
I was so reasonable. He wasn't expecting me to be reasonable. It's just going, well, yeah, but the other two were good. And if you get, it was like 7:30, it was an early gig. I said, well, it's 7:30 now, so if you went home, you can still save your evening.
That's a lack of comprehension, isn't it? That's assuming that three things on a thing have all got to suit you, and no understanding that if all three suit you, somebody else didn't like all three of them.
Yeah. But I think people can't see out of their own...
No. Especially with comedy. Yeah. It makes them furious.
It's the idea that someone else likes something.
You wouldn't do that with a play. No. In actual fact, bad theatre or a play that you didn't like leads to an intellectual discussion
or something. Yeah.
Where you go, well, what was it about the themes that you didn't like about that piece of theatre? And then you have like a debate about it. But with comedy, it's like, oh my God! Get the fuck out of my face! You fucking kind of fuck off! You know, we've all been there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play a song now. It's
my favourite.
You don't know. My point was that I always tried to think about with big value what would be the equivalent when people come up to you and they're angry with that they didn't like any of the comedy. It's just like it's like going to like big value music night, and then it's all opera, and you go, oh, I don't like opera.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I always thought, what's the difference? Is there an audience for that? And maybe you're the audience because you don't like music. You don't like music.
I just don't listen to it very much.
I'm the same. I only listen to Alice Cooper.
And I'm so glad that you rectified my mind. This will be
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
So that was the song that you picked because you don't really like music and you just thought, why not that one? But what's the other thing about that song?
It was the first dance at my wedding.
There you go. Open with that one next time. So what are you a fan of, Laura? We're joined in the studio by Laura Lex. Yep. No, I think on iTunes they just cut the songs.
Yes, they do.
So yeah. I don't really need to keep reintroducing us, do I?
I like it though.
But my name's Nick Helm and this is
Nathaniel Metcalf.
And you're listening to First rule of Fan Club is tell your friends about Fan Club. Second rule of Fan Club is please for the
love of God
please tell your friends about Fan Club. Please tell your friends about Fan Club. I'm joined here in the studio by Ridley's Games Room Movie Buff Quiz. I'm gonna Ridley Scott here. He's the obviously the famous Worm director.
It does take some explaining.
Right. He's the famous Worm director. Of Alien Covenant. Wormund was legend.
Yeah. Okay.
And Worm Runner.
Got it.
Obviously, and Thelma and Worm.
Yeah.
That's Ridley Scott. He directed all of those classics, and of course, Alien Covenant. So, so here's the question: do you know anything about films or anything like that?
Not loads. Well, actually, I do have weird niche film knowledge because I had to do a movie quiz podcast for a couple of years.
Hang on.
It's all learned, though. It's not that I've seen the films; it's that I had to research it to write the questions.
Okay. Why?
Because
why did you do that?
Because I do an improv show called Comedian Cinema Club where we recreate films.
Yeah.
And so I had to do like one of the podcast arms of it for a bit, and I did a quiz because I like quizzes.
Who does Comedian Cinema?
Isn't it
Eric and Matt?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. And it's got the CCC, yeah. Like the OCP corporation thing from RoboCop. That's Fan Club.
That's Fan Club.
That's the logo. The Silence of the Lambs is based on a book by which writer?
Thomas Harris?
Is it A, Thomas Harris? Oh. Is it B, Dan Brown? C, Stephen King? D, Tom Clancy? Yeah, it's Thomas Harris.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Matt Damon portrays a rugby player from which country in Invictus?
South Africa?
Is it A, Australia? B, England? C, New Zealand? Or D, South Africa? Yes, it was South Africa. We're going to keep going this until you get it wrong. What is the first name of Ripley, Sigourney Weaver's character, in Alien? Do you want the multiple choice?
Yes, I do.
Is it A, Ellen, B, Eloise, C, Erica, or D, Elizabeth?
I think it's A, Ellen.
Oh, yes.
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 Will Ferrell stars in which 2003 Christmas movie?
Elf.
Mikey Mouth, Data, and Chunk are characters in which movie?
Mikey Mouth.
Mikey?
Oh.
Mouth, Data, or Data, and Chunk
are
characters in which movie?
I got it. Back in the room.
I'll need the options.
Is it A, The Goonies, B, Back to the Future, C, Toy Story, D, E.T.?
The Goonies.
Yes, correct. Which movie is about oil drillers trying to destroy an asteroid headed for Earth?
Oh, Armageddon.
Absolutely. The Sound of Music is set in which European country?
Austria.
Well, I don't know anything about fucking. Which actress plays Dana Barrett in Ghostbusters?
Sigourney Weaver.
Now I'm a believer. Yes. Joe Pesci plays Tommy DeVito in which mafia movie?
Goodfellas?
These are fucking easy.
These are easy. If I've got these right, these are easy.
No, I think you do now.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith stars Angelina Jolie alongside which actor?
Bradius Pittus.
You could have also had a Vince Vaughn. What is the call sign of Tom Cruise's character in Top Gun?
Maverick?
Oh, it's a boring game. It's such a boring game. What is the name of the cotton plantation in Gone with the Wind? Oh, that's a fucking hard one.
Tara.
Oh, my God.
I wouldn't have got
you
that.
You could have had Lara, Cara, Tara, or Zara.
No, with God as my witness.
Would you have got that, Nick?
No, I wouldn't have got that. I wouldn't have got that at all. Spacecraft Nostromo appears in which movie?
Oh, that's Alien, isn't it?
I mean, it's a very Sigourney Weaver heavy round. Who wrote the original songs for The Lion King?
Oh, Tim Rice.
And?
Andrew Lloyd Webber? I don't know.
No.
Multiple choice.
Is it A, Andrew Lloyd Webber? Is it B, Elton John and Tim Rice? Is it C, John Williams? Or D, George Michael?
Oh, Elton John and Tim Rice then.
Yes. Because it was B, Elton John, I almost read Ben Elton. Mind you, he did write a musical, didn't he?
Yeah.
The beautiful game? Was it called Bat Football or something, wasn't it?
I was going to just say,
We All Rock You.
Yeah, he did that as well. He didn't write the lyrics, famously. Who plays Private Ryan in the movie of the same name? Is it A, Matt Damon, B, Edward Burns, C, Tom Hanks, or D, Tom Sizemore?
Matt Damon.
Oh, fucking hell. Just get one wrong. It's such a boring game. Okay. Lawrence Fishburne. No, don't get one wrong. Don't get one wrong. But there is another game that we've got to play in a bit, and we haven't asked you what your favourite stuff is. Although you're a fan of board games, and this is a very boring game. Lawrence Fishburne plays which... You're too kind. Lawrence Fishburne plays which character in The Matrix?
Orpheus?
Orpheus?
I've never seen it.
Is it A, Trinity, B, Cypher, C, the Oracle, or D, Morpheus?
Morpheus.
Interesting fact that Lawrence Fishburne turns up in The Matrix, and my friend that talks through all the films is next to me going, who's that? Who's that? Who's that? All the way through the whole film, Lawrence Fishburne turns up, who's he? And then the first line out of his mouth is, I am Morpheus. You go, just hold your fucking tongue. What was the name of the Monty Python film that parodied the Bible story?
The Life of Brian.
Gone with the Wind is set during which conflict?
The American Civil War.
What is the name of Simba's father in The Lion King?
Mufasa.
Which American state is the setting for Groundhog Day?
Pennsylvania?
Fucking hell. Which movie star is father to Pax, Knox and Vivian?
Oh, Brad Pitt.
Oh, what? Fucking hell.
Those
are his adopted children.
Who voices Darth Vader in the Star Wars movies?
James Earl Jones.
Which organisation does Clarice Starling work for in The Silence of the Lambs? I shall not repeat it.
The police.
Oh, my God. You got one wrong.
Yay!
It's the FBI, you dumbass. So let's get back on with our lives. That's Ridley's Games Room movie buff quiz available at Waterstones. If you're ever in an Airbnb when it's too cold to go outside, you do not want to be stuck with one of them.
But you're a fan of board games.
I love board games.
What's your favourite board game?
I know it's not a board game, but Magic the Gathering is probably the game I play the most.
Whoa.
And
so it's that kind of tabletop.
Yeah.
Like a what's that an RPG? Role play, what's
role that? No, game? That's just a card game. So Dungeons and Dragons would be an RPG, but Magic's just a deck building card game.
What does that mean? You go out and you buy the.
Yeah. So you collect the cards like football stickers and make your deck better. So it's not like this is the deck and that's the end of it. It's like you sub stuff in and out to improve
and
it.
Is that
Top
so
Trumps? Is that what Top Trumps is?
No.
But is that like Pokemon cards? Pokemon?
I don't think it's anything like either of those
things. Pokemon cards are where you have like different... we've got a guest to discuss what Magic the Gathering is, Natalie. We don't need you. do you mind not talking to us for a minute, Laura? We've got some reading to do. Oh, okay.
So they buy different subsets of them and things?
1993 was when they first started.
With Pokemon or
Magic the Gathering?
Oh.
It is funny. I don't really know anything about it. I know what it is, and it's only in this conversation that I've got. Magic cards I have no idea what it is.
So it's basically like you each have a deck of cards, and you're having a battle.
That's
so
incredible.
They've got like fighting ability.
Over 20 billion magic cards produced in the period of 2008 to 2016. Thanks for that, Natalie. Thanks for giving us all the information.
And make your deck better, like strengthening your conquer as your battle. Like the conquer strengthening is as important as the.
What's all this I've been hearing about booster packs? what's going on with these booster packs? So you can buy a booster pack, can
you? Yeah, yeah. Like a pack of football stickers, and then you want the shinies, and you put them in your deck.
I was buying some Garbage Pail Kids cards the other day, but they're not stickers anymore. They're cards.
Oh, yeah.
And they're called the Garbage Gang.
Okay.
So they've given them a bit of a rebrand.
Because people probably don't know what Cabbage Patch Kids are anymore, are they?
Probably. But they have like strength, or they have like different numbers on the back. I think whether it's kind of like pus related or vomit related.
But it is that kind of thing, right? So you have got characters of the card, character cards.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure I do know.
No, it's quite a difficult one to explain quickly, but it's basically you're having a battle with whoever you're playing with, and that can be like one person or 20 people, whatever you're doing. And
but this is a card battle. Not the sort of battle that you'd have with your family with when you're playing Monopoly.
Anyway. Like in the way that you fight people in Risk.
Right.
Right, okay.
But the cards have different strengths and abilities. And for me, it's just the most like flexible game I've ever come across. But
mine is yoga.
Good.
Can you do competitive yoga?
Yeah. Twister.
I think this... I should have said Twister. Mm. It's a flexible game. Come I really on. Like the idea of this magic game.
It's great, especially if you're on the road and you want a completely like variable game that isn't a massive board game.
Especially if you're on the road and you want an entire train carriage to yourself.
But is it one of those things where if you bring it up and someone
play
says,
magic?
Oh, I play that, do you kind of go, ugh?
No, because I think a lot of people play it. It's quite fun if somebody else can play it right there and then with you, and you're like, oh, cool, let's have a game.
I don't
think it's like a niche thing where you're like, I've overturned a rock.
Oh,
and
no,
found
no,
my
not
people.
At all. Not, yeah. I don't mean that. I know it's very, very popular, but is it? It's not a thing where you sort of, when someone does reveal it, it's not a thing where you go.
Well, I don't think there's loads to discuss because, like, you're into it or you're not into it, but it's not like you can be like, ooh, and do you love this card and this card? Because in that sense, it is like having 9 billion top trump cards
existence.
Sure.
I feel like
I
don't mean
there.
To sound... I'm not being dismissive.
No,
I'm 30. I'm 38. Am I too old to get into it? I've just got into Dr. Mario on the NES.
Not if you like games, sir.
I do
you
love
have
games.
A lovely time with it.
This isn't quite exactly the same thing, but I really love the card game Shithead.
Oh, yeah.
And I was out with Paul F. Taylor yesterday, and I got a deck of cards out. We had a bit of a chat, and at the end of the chat, I got a deck of cards out, and he said, Shithead? And and I've never played Shithead with him before. And I didn't have to explain him the rules.
Nice.
And we just every single other person I've played Shithead with, I've had to explain to them the rules. Mm-hmm. And he just knew.
Did he have the same rules? Because that's the thing, is that everyone knows how to play, but everyone knows a different way to play.
Yes. We had, I would say, 90% the same rules.
Wicked.
And then there was like one where it's just like, oh, I normally do that with that card. And he got a bit angry about it. But, but I just walked out. So, this, yeah, magic.
I played,
really
played Shithead with you a couple of Saturdays ago in a cocktail bar. In Islington, and I don't think they wanted us in there
at all.
Even before the show,
we were just playing cards. Yeah. And I think it was the wrong.
It's not an airport lounge.
Yeah, it felt like
it was a cocktail bar, but it was a cocktail bar that looked like
it was a pub that had been
the Four Sisters. Was it called?
Yeah, something like that. And it looked like a pub from the outside, but when you went in, it was like, oh, it's obviously used to be a pub that's now like quite a bit more fancy. And we went in there, and it was just like, can we have? You sell beers. It was all like that, and it was all a bit kind
of. What have you got that's not fruity?
I don't normally drink beer, and if I have to drink a pint, it'll be cider. But I tried to drink beer with Nathaniel, so it'd feel a bit. It was just after I needed to steady my nerves. I just received How to Train Your Dragon gift bag, and nearly got run over when I was going through it.
Someone was running you over for the gift bag.
No, I was distracted by looking at the DVDs that I'd just been given, and a car nearly hit me. I just walked into the road, yeah. And but you know, I needed a drink to steady my nerves.
I see.
Long story short, I'm back. So, what's the minimum amount of cards that you need in order to play Magic the Gathering?
A deck has to be 60 to be legal.
You have to have 60. And can you buy a deck of 60? Or do you have to buy individual? Do they come in the foil packets as well, right? And you buy them from like comic shops and Games Workshops, I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if I want to get into this. Because
it's quite an expensive hobby.
How much are they?
I've spent hundreds of pounds and I've only been playing it for a year.
Yeah, but you know what I've spent hundreds and hundreds of pounds on?
I don't know if I want
Tetris Blitz on my phone.
Oh.
It's unbelievable.
It depends whether you think spending money on games for the time you get for it. Like, I've spent hundreds of pounds on Magic, but I've spent thousands of hours playing it. I spend a tenner every time I go to the cinema, and that's 2 hours.
I've not spent any money on computer games for my whole life, and I don't smoke anymore.
Deal. It's your money. Do what you like.
Absolutely. Growing flowers and vegetables is another thing that you're a fan of.
I am. I'm a big fan.
Do you have your own garden?
Do you have a garden?
I have an allotment.
Oh,
my
lovely.
Sister's got an allotment.
Yeah.
I immediately think of Arthur Fowler from EastEnders.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Do you know what? I always think about the episode where he was cheating on his wife and he walked around the bed and she watched him walk around and it made me feel queasy as a kid. And now I think about it once a week.
Arthur Fowler cheated on his wife?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It was really sad.
It does make me quite sad because it's a bit like, not Arthur.
Yeah. Not Arthur. Oh, and he had that grim little face. On like, hey, I'm doing something naughty, I'm a little rat man. Oh, it's horrible.
Oh. I didn't have all my teeth, I used to call him Arthur. My sister's got an allotment and she does a thing where you put the apples next to the compost heap, and when the apples drop out of the tree, they go into the compost and then the worms eat them, mm-hmm. and then they do it. And it's sort of like a trickle down effect where I don't know what it's called, but it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. A self-sustaining allotment where each bit kind of does something
clever.
For the next bit.
Yeah, that's really
And it
clever.
Kind of looks after itself.
She had it for quite a long time.
Not that long, only a couple of years maybe, but like it's something that she's been reading about and doing.
It's quite slow. It's really fun. I've only had mine a year, so I did loads of growing last year, but then going away for all of Edinburgh, like in August, you miss a big chunk of the summer.
Oh, of course.
So a lot of stuff dried up and it was so dry last summer. But I've got a little greenhouse this year for my balcony, if I can get the pigeons off the balcony. Then I can grow some seedlings there.
A friend of mine.
You want to get the pigeons off the balcony?
I've got a bit of a pigeon infestation. It started out with just 2 pigeons that came to the balcony to have some babies. And now I've got 5 pigeons that shit everywhere. And I don't know how to get rid of them. So we're looking into some net options to
evict them. A friend of mine
got
into gardening. And then he's also started watching like Gardener's World and loves it. It's like one of his favourite.
It's really weirdly addictive, especially if you're like, you need a hobby that's less immediate. So it's got like a slow burn on. I am working towards something, but it's not like it's constantly getting those adrenaline boosts that wear off and leave you feeling dappy. It's like, I'm going to do 4 hours of planting and outside. And
Monty Don's got quite a good show about French gardens on Netflix. Just saying. I just start watching it. And we've got to get to the game. There's another game. We've got to get to the game. But you like cooking and baking.
Yeah.
What do you prefer?
Baking.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't stand baking shows. I love cooking shows, but baking shows. Do you grow your own herbs in the garden?
Yes. Yeah, loads of veg. I've got my leeks in at the moment.
Right.
I feel like I wish I was you. I wish I was the type of person that was like... that did that, but I don't think I am.
Do you know what? Have a full mental breakdown, and it really makes you reevaluate your options afterwards. Because, like, the trying show that I'm doing in a couple of weeks. After that, I kind of was sat around looking at my life and went, all I do is go to gigs and come home again. I had no hobbies. My friends all work the complete opposite hours to me. And I just didn't do anything other than comedy. And then, you know, you get those like 10, like, Q&A, 10 questions. What are you into coming up to the Edinburgh Festival? And I was like, what do you mean, what am I into? Nothing.
Yeah.
It's got all my money. It's got all my time. I don't know anybody outside of comedy anymore. Yeah. So then I started.
You'd recommend a mental breakdown.
Yeah, I rebuilt all my hobbies. If you want some good hobbies, have a breakdown first, and it really clarifies which hobbies you're into.
Are you doing Edinburgh next year, this year?
Yes.
Coming up?
Yeah.
Your show is on... should we play the game first? No, we'll do it now so that we know. Soho Theatre, 20th to the 23rd of February. I would really love to come and see your show. Can I get a comp?
Yes, you can.
Thank you very much. And I will be there. Right, we're now going to play the game. Nathaniel... please be in the room for this, because this is the only bit that you're actually trusted with.
Okay, this is better or worse. I'm going to give you a list of people, and you have to say whether the next person is better or worse than the person before, and it's just based entirely on my own opinion to win points.
I'm trying to guess your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Goldie Hawn is your starting person. Is Amy Adams better or worse than Goldie Hawn?
Worse.
Yeah, correct. Worse.
But it's a high card.
It's a high card.
I like Amy Adams.
Me too. Next up, Amy Adams. But is Russell Crowe better or worse than Amy
Adams?
Worse. Yeah, he is worse.
Yeah, worse. He's one of the worst human beings alive.
Juliet Lewis. Is Juliet Lewis better or worse than Russell Crowe?
Worse.
Juliet Lewis is better than Russell Crowe.
Oh, sorry.
She was in Natural Born Killers.
Sorry, Juliet.
Christopher Lloyd, better or worse?
She was in Natural Born Killers and From Dusk Till Dawn, and Russell Crowe threw a phone at a hotel maid.
Christopher Lloyd?
Better?
Better, yes.
Christopher Lloyd is better.
Uncle Fester, isn't he?
Sydney Poitier.
Fucking, that's a weird one to go for first.
Yeah.
He's Doc Brown, isn't he?
Yes.
Sydney Poitier, better or worse than Christopher Lloyd?
Ooh, worse?
I think better.
Right.
I suppose you have to have seen some Sydney Poitier films, though, haven't you?
Yeah.
Rod Stewart, better or worse than Sydney Poitier?
Much worse.
Is Helen Mirren better or worse than Rod Stewart?
Better, yes.
Is Chris Evans better or worse than Helen Mirren?
Worse.
The radio presenter, Chris Evans.
Worse.
Is Chris Evans better or worse than Chris Evans?
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Better than everyone
better
on the planet.
Or worse.
The best.
Chris Evans.
The radio DJ.
Yeah.
The
worse.
Best.
He's better. He's better than Chris Evans.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson is better than the radio DJ Chris Evans.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm going to say. That's the end.
Okay. What's the score? Seven. You're in good company there with seven.
You are. It's a good score.
We haven't got. We're leading up to our year, so maybe when we get to the end of the year, we should get whoever got a 10 back in to go head to head. But you're in the same group with Hayley Campbell, Brett Goldstein, Charlie Higson, Matthew Holness, Ian Smith, Josh Widdicombe, and Sean McLaughlin. Of course, beating you is John Nivens, Sean Harris, Daniel Cook, Daniel Lawrence Taylor, Michael Legg, Solomon Gray with 9, 8, Claudie Blakely, Jordan Brooks, Suze Kempner, Evelyn Mock, Paul F. Taylor, Rebecca Shorex, Mark Smith, and Carl Theobald. And then below you with 6, Drunk Women Solving Crimes, Colin Holt, Andy Kindler, Merritt Larwood, Lucy Porter, Richard Sandling, Mark Simmons, David Trent, 5, Yasmin Akram, Rob Deering, 4, Jack Barry, Bunny Galore, and 3, fucking Sam Ashurst. So thank you for coming in today. It's been absolutely lovely having you. Definitely going to go and see your show on the 20th to the 23rd of February. And that has been Fan Club.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.